The Revolver album was released in the UK on August the 5th, 1966, and in America on August the 8th. Here's George Martin.
This was something that I always said from the word go. We shouldn't just make a formula thing. We should try and be different as much as possible all the time. And tried very hard to do that. And sometimes I thought we were going maybe... I thought, sort of being too risky and going too far out. But it paid off. And Brian and I had a kind of plan. We would issue a single every 3 months and an album twice a year. And that was a kind of general scheme we worked out. We didn't stick religiously to it, but it was the broad basis of our working out. And every album that came out, I wanted to be different from the one before. And as soon as the Beatles realized their creative abilities in the studio, they got hooked onto this thing of really building something new each time. They were more of interest than me. And they were coming to me saying, you know, what new sounds can we use? What instruments do you know about we don't know about?
Eleanor Rigby, released in Britain on August 5th and in the US on August the 8th. It eventually only reached number 2 on the Billboard chart. On August the 12th, at the start of the Beatles' last ever tour, John reluctantly apologised to the world for his statement about Jesus.
I'm trying, Sally. I was sort of deploring the attitude. The thing, I wasn't saying whatever they were saying, I was saying anyway. That's the main thing about it. And I was just talking to a reporter, but... she also happens to be a friend of mine and the rest of us. At home, it was a sort of in-depth series she was doing. And so I wasn't really thinking in terms of PR or translating what I was saying. It was going on for a couple of hours, and I just said it as just to cover the subject, you know. And and it really meant what... you know, I didn't mean it the way he said it. That's amazing. It's just so complicated. It's got out of hand, you know. But I just meant it as that. That the Beatles... I wasn't saying the Beatles are better than Jesus or God or Christianity. I was using the name Beatles because I can use them easier. And I was using, you know, because I can talk about Beatles as a separate thing and use them as an example, especially to a close friend. But I could have said TV or... cinema or anything else that's popular or motor cars are bigger than Jesus. But I just said Beatles because, you know, that's the easiest one for me. I just never thought of repercussions. I never really thought of it. I wasn't even thinking, even though I knew she was interviewing me, that she was going to, you know, that it meant anything.
What's your reaction to the repercussions?
Well, when I first heard it, I thought, it can't be true. It's just one of those things like bad eggs in Adelaide and things. And then when I realised it was serious, I was worried stiff. You know, because I knew the sort of how it'd go on. And the more the things that would get said about it, and all those miserable-looking pictures of me looking like a cynic, and they'd go on and on and on, and it'd get out of hand, and I couldn't control it, you know. I can't answer for it when it gets that big, because it's nothing to do with me, then. I'm sorry I said it, really, for the mess it's made. But I never meant it as a lousy or anti-religious thing or anything. You know, I can't say any more than that. There's nothing else to say, really. You know, no more words. If an apology is, if he wants one, I'll, you know, he can have it.
They start off with rock and roll music.
Oh!
You like that one?
I love it.
And then they do, Babies in Black.
Do they do Long Tall Sally?
Yeah. And they only do two screamers. They do rock and roll music at the beginning and Long Tall Sally at the end.
Labor Day, when they came the first time, they ended with Long Tall Sally.
Oh. Which one do you like the most out of all the Beatles?
I like Paul, but I think John's sexy.
Really sexy?
Yeah.
What do you think of George?
I think he's very quiet, but... oh, he's sexy, too.
He's very deep, George.
Yeah, he's... He's quiet, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
And what about Ringo?
No, I don't like Ringo.
I was alone, I took a ride, I didn't know what I would find there. Another road where maybe I could see another kind of mind there. Ooh, then I suddenly see you. You didn't run, you didn't lie, you knew I wanted just to hold you. And had you gone, you knew in time we'd meet again, for I told you. Ooh, you were meant to be near me. Ooh, and I want you to hear me say we'll be together. Get you into my life somehow, some way. What can I do? What can I be when I'm with you? I wanna stay there. If I'm true, I'll never leave, and if I do, I know the way there. Ooh, then I suddenly see you. Ooh, did I tell you I need you every single day of my life? Got to get you into my life somehow, some way. I need your love, I need your love, I need your love, I need your love into my life, oh, somehow, some way. Got to get you into my life, oh.
Anyway, I asked Paul about his new album, Revolver, and who did which to what on it.
It depends, you know, like with some songs I write lyrics and music, and so does John with some other songs. On some, we just get together and just do a line each, you know, words and music each. Depends, you know, how it happens and what kind of mood we're in. It's normally no formula about it, though.
You find opposition from people who want you to play to the teenagers?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you see, we've kept quite a few songs on the album. I mean, if we just suddenly did exactly what we'd want to do... in fact, I think, actually, at the moment, that is what we want to do, what we've done on Revolver. But if we did, like, all the way out things... I mean, I suppose people think they're way out. I don't, actually, but that kind of thing. If we did a whole album of them, then we'd be doing what, like, the people who do electronic music do. They go too far out too suddenly, and no one stays with them. And everyone else is left behind because they're miles out ahead, sort of digging all this electronic stuff. But in fact, what we've tried to do is, like, do the last album, Rubber Soul, a bit more towards that, then this one a bit more, and the next one should be a bit more. And if people stay with us, you know, it's great.
What's your name? I'm John Levinsky, and you're a local here.
Yeah,
I'm from more than that.
And you're going to leap up on stage right
yeah.
This moment?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, there he goes. He's going to leap up now. He's on stage, and he's got hold of John. He's got hold of Paul. Now he's getting George. They've got him off stage right now. They pushed him off. And he's been grabbed by all the police. What an interview.
Woohoo!
I bet this is an exclusive. They've got him by the legs and arms. And they're taking him off right now. He's being bundled in a police car. Oh, boy, it's all happening tonight, friends, in Boston.
On August 19th, they played in Memphis, and the Ku Klux Klan were there too.
Well, at the moment, we're in the Greyhound bus just leaving the stadium in Memphis, and there's about through, looking out of the back of the bus where I'm sitting now, I can see the Colosseum disappearing into the background. There's about one, two, three, four, five police cars following us. Dust everywhere. We're on a dust track at the moment. And kids running by the side of the bus, getting in front of the bus, in back of the bus, around the police cars. No bad happenings tonight. Thank God for that. Except for one firecracker.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh. And when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. We take a walk. The sun is shining down. Burns my feet as they touch the ground. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Then we lie beneath a shady tree. Loving me, she feels good. She knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
I can see our career now. It's gone through, almost through a complete change. From when we first started in Germany, we were very much more popular with the lads than with the girls. And slowly we built up a following. We used to play good on stage. We used to, you know, we were really swung together in the old days. The more fame and that we got, the more people who came about to see us. And it got into the time when there was just thousands of girls everywhere and everybody making a noise, and so that nobody could hear us anyway. So over the last 2 years, nobody's heard us on stage, so consequently our performances have deteriorated to such an extent now that, you know, really our stage shows are terrible. But, you know, they can't hear it and we can't hear it. That's why it's terrible.
Which one's your favourite? What do you like about him?
He's beautiful.
When I wake up early in the morning, lift my head, I'm still yawning when I'm in the middle of a dream. Stay in bed, float upstream, float upstream. Keep on waking, no, don't shake me. Where I am, I'm only sleeping. Every
August the 29th, 1966, Candlestick Park, San Francisco, the last concert.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
And it's a bit chilly. We'd like to do the next number now, which is a special request for all the wonderful backroom boys on this tour. The song is called I Wanna Be Your Man. To sing it, please! I wanna be your lover, babe. I wanna be your man. I wanna be your lover, babe. I wanna be your man.
Brian, how does this tour compare with last year's?
We're phenomenal, actually. It's much better all round. From the point of view, there's much more interest. And actually, we're playing to bigger audiences than we've ever played to. This probably might sound a bit odd because people have been saying, you know, things about diminishing popularity and so on. But one can go by is what sort of attendances we're getting at the concerts, and they're absolutely huge. I think that by the time we leave here, the boys will have been seen by about 400,000 people.
Those 400,000 people were the last to see a Beatles concert. Next, the song from Revolver that gave an indication of what was to come in 1967. On September the 6th, 1966, John's Beatle haircut disappeared when he started his first solo acting role in the movie How I Won the War. George travelled to India, Ringo to Spain, and Paul stayed in Britain composing the soundtrack for the film The Family Way. On November the 9th, John visited the Indica Gallery in London to see a preview of an exhibition by Japanese artist Yoko Ono. They were introduced by gallery owner John Dunbar. The Revolver album, meanwhile, had hit number one on the Billboard chart in the US, and the last song on side two pointed the way forward. Here's George Martin.
Tomorrow Never Knows certainly was the beginnings of a new era, the kind of surrealistic look at building up sound pictures. And I thought that was great. But going into Sgt. Pepper, there was a kind of development through to Tomorrow Never Knows, through Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane, which was a single, which was the beginning of the Pepper album. But it wasn't part of the Pepper album because we wanted a single out. I mean, you can see the connections between Tomorrow Never Knows, Strawberry Fields, right through to Day in the Life. It's all there.
Turn off your mind, relax and float downstream.
Thank you.
you had a show on the radio, and you had 3 hours to do what you liked in, you know, if you didn't have to play records, would you philosophize or just do a normal radio show?
Neither. I'd just do good fun and laughs, I suppose, and a few sounds.
You think it's good to hear somebody having a good time on the air?
Just something nice to hear. You know, I wouldn't mind doing shows like that, make them at home.
Do you really?
I quite fancy it, you know. Paul and I often talk about it.
Do you have tape recorders in your house?
Yes, a few.
And you just chat away?
Yes, and do loops and whatever you do.
Ah, loops. Now this is a thing.
Yes, loops.
Yeah, from tomorrow never knows. Paul said that he just took a few of his loops to the studio.
Yes, he made them at home on his tape, in the key of whatever the key was, and they were just near the inn. And we had six fellows with pencils holding them on.
Yeah.
On six machines, and very desirable, the whole effect, I thought.
From November the 24th until the end of the year, they were back at the Abbey Road Studios recording Strawberry Fields Forever, When I'm 64, and Penny Lane.
Everywhere it's Christmas, everywhere it's song. London,
Paris,
oh, and New York,
Tokyo, Hong Kong.
It's Christmas.
And I'm off to join the charm.
Everywhere is Christmas.
At the end of every year.
Oh, everywhere is Christmas. At the end of every year.
I said that.
Everywhere is Christmas. At the end of every year.
One more time.
Our story opens in Corsica. On the veranda is a bearded man in glasses conducting a small choir.
Meanwhile, high in the Swiss Alps, two elderly Scotchmen munch on a rare cheese.
Wonderful stuff, this, Agnes.
Aye, it's wonderful stuff.
I'm standing in the entrance to the main tent. Immediately behind me, the festivities have already begun.
Tell me, are you enjoying the wine?
I am indeed, Your Highness.
Hey,
that's well with me.
I am, sir. Oh, yeah, you are.
Very, very good. Well,
the king seems to be enjoying himself tonight.
Yet I've not seen him on such good form since the October festival.
At the same time as this, in the captain's mess on board HMS Tremendous, a toast is being proposed.
To Her Majesty!
To Her Majesty!
Podgy the Bear and Jasper were huddled around the unlit fire in the centre of the room.
There are no more matches left, Podgy,
said Jasper.
Then buy some, Jasper, old friend,
said Podgy.
Make a list, and afterwards we'll go to the shop and buy matches and candles and buns.
There's no more paper to write on, Podgy.
No need to worry, Jasper. You keep saying to yourself matches, and I'll keep saying candles until we reach the shop. Then we won't need to write it down. We'll remember.
We'll remember the buns, Podgy.
We both will. Jasper. Matches.
Candles.
Matches.
Candles.
Matches.
Candles.
Matches.
Candles.
In the long dark corridors of Felpin Mansions, a door slams. And the shadowy figure of Count Balder appears. The Count is the eccentric son of Baron Landsberg, the inventor of the rack. He speaks.
Guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren. Welcome to Felpin Mansions. Butler will show you to your rooms. Butler!
Yes, sir?
Show the ladies and gentlemen to their rooms.
Yes, sir. Come this way, please.
Come in.
May I come in?
Come in, Count.
May I?
Oh, yes, come in.
Ah, thank you. I was wondering if you knew any of the songs from the good old days.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, don't you worry on that score. I hear the Baron likes, I hear the Baron likes the good old tune.
Yes, I do.
So do I, Count. So do I. Well, they're all melody, aren't they? No, don't you worry, I'll play him this one. He liked this one. Is it? Listen to this one. Please don't bring your banjo back. I know where it's been. I wasn't hardly gone a day when it became the scene. Banjos, banjos, all the time. I can't forget that tune. And if I ever see another banjo, I'm going out to buy a big balloon.
And if I ever see another banjo, I'm going out to buy a big balloon. And if I ever see another banjo, I'm going out to buy a big balloon.
Yes, everywhere it's Christmas.
Everywhere it's Christmas. Everywhere it's song. London,
Paris, oh, and New York,
and Tokyo, Hong Kong.
Oh, everywhere it's Christmas.
And I'm off to join the char.
Everywhere is Christmas.
At the end of every year.
Oh, everywhere is Christmas. At the end of every year.
I said that.
Right about now, I would like to bring on somebody for you. Want to tell you that, ask you to help me make this introduction. I'd like to say a name, and I'd like you to repeat the name. And then when we get through, we'll all add it up, and it ought to have some fun for you. Are you ready? Let me say it first. You repeat it after me. John.
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, a history of the Beatle years 1962 to 1970. I'm Roger Scott in London. It's 1967.
So to begin with, the Beatles knew that I didn't really approve of all that. And so they kept it undercover. You know, if they wanted to smoke, they'd get Mel to organise something in the canteen. They'd lock the door and go down there, and I'd see them disappearing one by one. And I would knew I'd know perfectly well what was going on, but that was it. They weren't open about it.
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Here's George Martin.
Well, the beginning of the recordings were not really Pepper, because we'd been out of the studio for a while, and we came back in to start a new batch of recordings, and the very first one we recorded was Strawberry Fields, and that was going to be the beginning of a new album. And when you think about it, Strawberry Fields is very much akin to Pepper than anything we'd had before. And then we recorded When I'm 64, and then we recorded Penny Lane. And then we had a break for Christmas, and we started again in February. Well, the reason why we had Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane issued as a single was that in those days we always made the single separate from the album, and we needed a single. So I whipped it off the tracks we've been doing, kept When I'm 64, and then we started in seriously doing the album. But Pepper itself didn't become a reality until more or less halfway through the project. We worked on it for about 5 months, and Paul brought this song in about a mythical band. And I don't know whose idea it was. It may have been Paul's, to turn the whole thing into a record by that mythical band. And then from then on, it just grew by itself, like Topsy. It almost seemed to have a will of its own.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know, and all the people that come and go stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car. The little children laughing him.
On January the 6th, 1967, the soundtrack to the movie The Family Way, composed by Paul McCartney, was released in the UK. Most of January was spent at Abbey Road, completing the new single. And on the 9th of February, two very unusual and expensive promotional films were shown on BBC TV's Top of the Pops. 4 days later, those two songs were released in the US, and 4 days after that, in the UK. One side of the new single was Penny Lane, the other, Strawberry Fields Forever.
I think the Strawberry Fields did represent the major change in the boys' lives. It was the beginning of the Pepper episode, and it was the beginning of the highly imaginative, some people say psychedelic, way of writing. I prefer to think of it as being complete tone poem imagery. You know, I think it's more like a modern Debussy, if you like, or Ravel. I think that their ideas there had developed enormously in a very flowery way, but a very sensible way. And I regard Strawberry Fields as being really a very great song. Penny Lane was entirely a Paul composition. Strawberry Fields was entirely a John composition. And I think you can see the difference in the two there. With Strawberry Fields, we did two recordings of this. The first time, we made a record with just the boys themselves. And it worked out pretty well, I thought, anyway. And John went away and listened to the lacquers that we cut of it. And he came back to me and said, George, he said, I don't think it's really what I had in mind when I first wrote it.
And I had to admit, I said, well, you know, honestly, John, it has worked out rather heavier than I first thought when you sat and played it to me on an acoustic guitar. I thought it was going to be a little more flowing than it has been. He said, well, that's the point. He said, I want to make it a little more smooth. Can you do a score for me and we'll do a new record? So I scored it for some cellos and for some trumpets and various things. And we made another record of Strawberry Fields Forever. And he went away and listened to that. And he said, it's very much better. I like it much better. But it's still not right. There's a lot in the original recording that's really better than this one. It's a pity we can't have the two together. He said, if we could take the beginning of one and the end of another, that'd be great. So I listened to them both, and I said, well, there's only one thing, John. To begin with, they're completely different tempos, and they're in two different keys. Apart from that, it'd be very easy to cut them together. So he looked at me and smiled, and he said, well, I'm sure you can fix it.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. No one, I think, is in my tree. I mean, it must be high or low. That is, you can't, you know, tune in, but it's all right. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Always know sometimes think it's me, but you know I know. Yes, but it's all wrong. That is, I think I disagree. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever. Strawberry Fields forever.
In March, Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever only climbed to number 2 in the UK charts, but in the US it made the top. That month they received 3 Grammy Awards for 1966 and 2 British Ivor Novello Awards for the same year. Through February, March and into April, recording and mixing continued at Abbey Road for the new LP, and on May 20th the BBC announced they would ban the song Day in the Life from the new album because it might encourage drug taking. On the 31st of May, the album was launched with a press evening at Brian Epstein's London flat. That was the night Paul met Linda Eastman. Sergeant Pepper, next. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, released in Britain on June the 1st and in the US June 2nd. On the 3rd of June, it was number 1 in the UK and stayed there for 22 weeks in all, and a further 11 weeks at number 2. Here's Paul.
But I think the big influence was Pet Sounds. Beach Boys, that was the album Flip Me, still does actually, still one of my favourite albums of all time. Just because the musical invention on that is like, wow. But that was the big thing for me. I just thought, oh dear me, this is the album of all time, what the hell are we going to do? So my ideas took off from that standard and I wanted to do stuff beyond that. So my bass playing started, I don't know if that was a direct result of that, but I was thinking along those lines. And so Sgt. Pepper kind of eventually came out. Basically from the idea that I had about this band, it was going to be an album of another band that wasn't us. We were going to call ourselves, and just imagine all the time that it wasn't us playing this album. And it was just a nice little mind warp to get you to see the album, because when you're too close, it lent distance to the album. So I had this song written of Sergeant Pepper, and he was 20 years ago, and he taught us to play, and we're his proteges, and here we are. And then John had some good songs that he'd been writing at the time, Day in the Life, and to mention a few. And we worked on those and finished those, and George wasn't very involved in that album, he just had one song really. It's really the only time during the whole album, main time, I remember him turning up. But originally the cover was going to be us, dressed as this other band, in kind of crazy gear, but it was all going to be stuff that we'd always wanted to wear, all stuff that like we always secretly really liked, and it may have been there. And we were going to have photos on the wall, which were all our heroes. And it could be anything. It could be Marlon Brando in his leather jacket, or it could be Einstein. It could be anybody we'd all ever thought, oh, he was good. And it was going to be this band and all their cult heroes. And we kind of put this other identity on them to do it. And that was how it turned out. You know, the cover got changed a lot, you know, in the process. But that was the basic idea behind it. You know,
sang out a tune, would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Gonna try with a little help from my friends.
They were always wanting to push the frontiers further and further on, and they were getting more and more difficulty in realizing what they were trying to get, because they were becoming more and more incoherent. So my main job was to try and get inside them and find out what it was they were trying to do and make it practical. And it was really Jeff Emmerich was the young engineer I had, who started at the end of Revolver, our main problem was making it practical and realizing all these dreams, and worrying very much about the technical side and not losing generations too much on the dubs from four track and so on.
Did you approve of all the things they were saying?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was very much so. I'm very much into experimenting too. See, don't forget, from my point of view, it was rather going back in like a full cycle. It was like making a Peter Sellers record again. Doing Sergeant Pepper for me was going back in time. I was able to use sound effects, and I was building up a sound picture. That was just what it was, painting and sound, and it was great for me. I loved it.
How many takes did you usually do on this album before you got the perfect take?
We did quite a few on each one. But it's just because it's changed, you know. Like in the old days of like the LP Please Please Me, we went in and did it in a day because we knew all the numbers and, you know, they'd been... We'd rehearsed them and done them and been playing them for
about a year. But nowadays we just take a song in and all we've got, you know, is the chords on a guitar and the words and the tune. So we've got to work out how to arrange it and that. So we do a lot of takes on each one. You know.
When you get down to it, it was nothing more than an album called Sgt. Pepper with the tracks stuck together.
Yeah.
You know, with a few soundtracks. When you really be specific about it, you know, but it was a beautiful idea then, you know, but it doesn't mean a thing now. And when you get down to each individual music on it, there's Day in the Life.
Yeah.
And I can't think of anything else. You know.
Well, that's what you
really
remember, but that's really
what else is on it, you know, musically, besides the whole concept of having tracks running into each other.
This, in fact, again, was people accused us of saying it referred to puncture marks in people's arms for heroin addicts and all that kind of nonsense. The way that those lyrics came about was dead simple. John would often take his lyrics from quite ordinary, commonplace events, and that very day he'd seen a copy of the Daily Mail, which, in fact, had a report in it from one councillor of Blackburn, Lancashire, that the roads of Blackburn were absolutely disgusting, and that he'd been round and he counted over 4,000 holes in the roads. And John thought this was rather funny, and I did too. And so he included it as a verse in his song, 4,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. How many holes would it take to fill the Albert Hall?
On July the 1st, the Sgt. Pepper album hit number one in the US and stayed there for 15 weeks in all, and a further six at number two. On June 25th, 400 million people simultaneously heard the new Beatles single. That's coming next. On June the 25th, 1967, the first ever worldwide television satellite link-up took place. The show was called Our World, and 24 countries each contributed a segment. The British part of the show was the Beatles performing their new single. Here's George Martin.
Well, you know, the specification for All You Need Is Love was pretty rigid. It had to be a new song, and it was going to be the English contribution to an international programme, which was going out and being seen by 200 million viewers. That was what they told us, enough to terrify the pants off anyone. And they wanted it to be a live performance in the studio. So the boys never thought twice about the awe-inspiring thing of being faced with it. They just said they'd do it anyway. And so they came to me and said, well, will you do a score for it and wrap it up for us? And John wrote this song. I said, well, let's do a track, first of all. Let's hedge our bets. And so we were in the studios and we did a basic rhythm track on John's song. And I wrote the introduction and the tag ending. And we got a band in the studio and the boys performed it live. They actually sang, you know, in the studio live, and they had an audience there. And Mike Vickers conducted the band in the studio, and I was in the control room with Jeff.
All right, we're ready? Let's go for it then.
When we finished the track, or rather, when we finished the broadcast, I said, well, obviously we're going to issue this record. Now let's work on it. So the broadcast went out as one thing, but then I overdubbed John's voice again and double-tracked it and put extra voices on and then issued the live record in that form. So it wasn't quite what went out on television, but most people remember it that way.
Love is a holiday. 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 Love is a holiday.
Few differences. You see, what happened was the fella from the BBC, an organisation which I'm sure you've heard of, asked us to get together a song for this, you see. So he said, well, we'll get together one with nice, easy words so that everyone can understand it. And he said, all right, then, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. So we went away and we just played Monopoly for a bit. And then the fella said, now, where's the song? So we said, ah, don't worry, Derek. His name was Derek Burrell Davis. Don't worry, Derek Burrell Davis, we'll soon have a song for you. So John and I just got together, thought, now, blah, 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 we thought, blah. And I wrote one, and John wrote one. And we went to the session, and we just decided to do his first. Anyway, by the time we'd done the backing track for his, we suddenly realised that his was the one, you see. All you need is love. Perfect, you know, just for to say, if you're going to say any message, then that's a fine, wonderful message to say, you see. So we just put that one put the track down, and then we did the vocal and everything, and it turned into it. So we still got mine ready to do for the next one, which is of a similar nature in its simplicity but with a different message.
All You Need Is Love reached number one in Britain on July the 7th. That month, all four Beatles added their names to a list of signatures in an advertisement in the Times that advocated the legalization of marijuana. On August 1st, George Harrison and his wife Patty traveled to Los Angeles to see Ravi Shankar. Whilst they were there, George wrote this.
Very long. people here think of you as a saint. What is it that you preach?
I preach a simple system of transcendental meditation, which gives the people the insight into life, and they begin to enjoy all peace and happiness. And because this has been the message of all the saints in the past, they call me saint.
You seem also to have caught the imagination of the pop stars in this country.
What is this pop star?
people who sing with guitars. Have you anything to say about that?
I find that... You mean the Beatles?
Yes. And others.
I found them very intelligent and young men of very great potential in life. And they, during my stay here, they'll look into the details of this transcendental meditation, and if they find that it does bring more energy and more intelligence and release from stress and strain, then they will be the leaders for the next coming generation to spread this message of peace and harmony. There's a great potential in them.
On August the 24th, the Beatles attended a lecture on transcendental meditation by the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi at the Hilton Hotel in London. What happened next, in a minute. On August the 25th, 1967, the Beatles and their entourage travelled to Wales to attend a weekend meditation seminar under the Maharishi. Whilst they were there, Brian Epstein was found dead in his London flat.
Have you a tribute you'd like to pay to Mr. Epstein?
Well, you know, we don't know what to say. We just loved him, and he was one of us. So you can't, you know...
Pay tribute in words.
Did the Maharishi give you any words of comfort?
His meditation gives you confidence enough to withstand something like this, even the short amount we've had.
And then the thing that we've got to know about, there's no real such thing as death anyway. I mean, it's death on a physical level, but life goes on everywhere and you just keep going, really. But so the thing is, it's not as disappointing as... It is and it isn't, you know. And the thing about the comfort is to know that he's okay.
You?
No, that's about it.
George Martin.
He was the person who achieved the impossible because they weren't terribly well organized when they started. And they hadn't got any... I mean, he was their first manager. And a lot of criticism has been leveled at him for... not being more astute in business negotiations and not getting better deals for them and so on. But that's hindsight. And my view of him is that he was absolutely super and that his handling of the group in the early stages was something that only he was able to achieve. If they'd had somebody else, they could well have been sold down the river and they may not have achieved the eventual success they did have. He did tend to lose it after a while because... he wasn't the most disciplined of people himself.
At the end of August, Paul introduced the others to his plan for a TV film called Magical Mystery Tour.
The whole idea of making films is good, or a good one I like. But not, I don't mean sort of very big, expensive films, but films that you sort of just make because you fancy making a film. Yeah. You know, and I mean, when you're kids, you sort of say, let's play a game.
Yeah.
But when you've got sort of money... to do things like that, to play games with almost, you know.
Yeah.
You can do the same things you did as a kid, and it's great, but you can do them, you know, on a different level completely.
Yeah.
And so, for instance, it'd be great just to say, I'd like to make a film, you know.
Do you think, in fact, do this?
Yeah, but lots of things, I haven't done it with a film.
From November the 24th until the end of the year, they were back at the Abbey Road Studios recording Strawberry Fields Forever, When I'm 64, and Penny Lane.
Interplanetary Remix, stage 444.
Boys arrive at BBC House.
What do you want?
We have been granted permission, O wise one.
Pass in peace.
audition will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday the 1st in the Fluffy rehearsal rooms. Bring your own. Thank you.
Next, please.
Would over here be convenient for you?
Carry on.
Over here. Are you 39?
Next, please.
Get one of us for your trousers. Get one of us for your hair.
Sitting with me in the studio tonight is a cross-section of British youth. I'd like, first of all, to speak to you, Sir Gerald.
Oh, not a bit of it. We had a job to do, Michael.
Yes, quite. I don't think you're answering my question.
Oh, let me put it this way. There was a job to be done.
Christmas time is here again. Christmas time is here again.
On to the next round. In the recent heavy fighting near Blackpool, Mrs. G. Evans of Solihull was gradually injured. She wants, for all the people in hospital, plenty of jam jars by the Ravellers.
And here it is.
Plenty of jam jars, baby. Plenty of jam jars for you.
Are you?
32.
Never.
I am.
Get away.
I am.
Well, what prize have you got your eyes on?
I have.
Ooh. Well, you've just won a trip to Denver and five others.
Oh, thank you.
And also, wait for it, you have been elected as independent candidate for Paddington.
Oh! Ooh.
So go on for yourself.
Get one of us for your trousers. Get one of us for your hair.
Theatre Hour is brought to you tonight from the arms of someone new.
Hello, I'm speaking from a cold.
Hello? Hello, operator? Hello, operator? I've been cut off. I've been cut. Hello, it's an emergency.
Christmas time is here again. Ain't been wrong since you know where. Christmas time is here again.
That's right.
O-U-T spells out.
Well, how old are you?
32. Well, you won a prize! Get off the show!
They'd like to thank you for a wonderful year.
We'd like to thank you for a wonderful year.
Thank you for a wonderful year.
Carry on.
Look out for yourself. Come in.
When Christmas time's o'er and your bonny clay is through, I'll be bristling to you people. All the best from me to you. When the beastie brangle mutton to the heather in the glen, I'll be strutting out my tether. See your arms once back again. Look away.